Today, well, the RBA does it again. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property use. Today, I'm joined by Steve from Canstar. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Martin.
Well, we're going to talk about two things today. Firstly, the RBA, and then some specific research that you guys have been doing. But your reaction to the RBA, no surprise, really?
No, fully expected that. The inflation rate kind of put probably grounds for a pause in thinking for the RBA, because inflation went back over 5%. Now, that's headline inflation, went up by 4.9 to 5.2 or something. But when you take out the volatile items, now that's fruit and veggies, petrol and overseas holidays, it actually fell for the month. So that's why they would have paused. But the RBA also looks at the inflation rate and says, look, we trust the quarterly numbers, not the monthly numbers. So we'll wait for another quarterly result, which comes later this month. And that makes November kind of the first crunch time we'll hit in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and it's interesting because to me, the sense I think was it's a hawkish pause, right? So there's still a bit of a sense of rates may still have to go higher. We're looking at inflation. They mentioned the oil price as being one of those determinants. But stripping out some of those volatile items like oil, then inflation may be a little bit more benign. But, you know, the inflation battle is certainly not over yet, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, there's a long way from around 5% to below 3%. It sounds easy when you say it fast, but it's not easy. Now, I think we're on that trajectory because when you look at quarter to quarter, where you see the actual quarterly numbers, we're not that far off it. So each quarter you move on, you lose a higher inflation quarter and put on a lower inflation quarter. So we're not far off it. But people have to remember, and this is the hard message here, that just because you get down to 2.5% or something inflation doesn't mean suddenly that you claw back all of the price increases that have gone through, because it's not that at all. You don't ever get them back. All it just means is the prices stop going up as quickly.
Well, that's right. Well, the analogy I use is we're still shooting down the motorway. We're just not quite speeding as fast as we were. We're still going in the same direction, right? There's been no reversal of prices, no fall in prices. In real terms, inflation is still much stronger than in income for most people.
Oh, it is. It is. Absolutely is. There's no way incomes went up by 7% last year. There is no chance of that happening. We'd be in trouble if it did, of course, because that means we would have entrenched price spiral, which we had in the 1970s. We never want to see that again. Mm. But you're absolutely right. People who are finding it hard to afford the cost of living now will continue to have that problem because prices are high now, they'll stay high, they'll still go up by a bit, but not by as much.
And it's interesting, I don't know whether you saw, there was an FOI the other day to the Reserve Bank, specifically looking at their conversations about how stressed households are. And in fact, the DFA research got a bit of a mention in that, as well as them talking to a number of debt counsellors. It's interesting that they seem to focus very much on what I call the debt servicing ratio, the DSR, as though that was the critical determinant of whether people were actually stressed or whether they weren't. I have a feeling personally that that's a very narrow definition of stress, because what I'm seeing is significant pressure across the board from households because everything's gone up and their incomes are not following. And therefore, my definition of more cash flow measures gives a different story, but actually points in the same direction, which is we have more people certainly struggling.
Yeah. Pardon me. You're absolutely right. If you look at sort of mortgage stress, you can apply rules of thumb like 30% of gross income and stuff like that. Now, that's kind of a very blunt instrument because 30% if you're on $300,000 a year is easy. 30% if you're on $100,000 a year is not easy, let alone if you're on a lesser income. So that's a very blunt instrument. The the best way I find to do it is to use the mortgage calculators that the banks use. Now, that includes sort of estimates of all of your expenses and the household expenses and all the rest of it. Now, that's not too bad, because if you can qualify for a loan today based on that, which builds in a buffer of 3%, then you're probably in okay shape. But of course, those cost of living estimates aren't updated live for inflation. Now, I'm not quite sure how often they are, and you might know that, Martin, but they're not updated. Now, if you add another 7 or 8% to those, then you'll find that you're in trouble again, that you sort of have underestimated those.
Yeah, it's certainly a lag, at least 3, often 6 months. And the other data point, which is the HILDA survey, you know, they're using data there from 3 years ago to make assessments. So, you know, it's hardly current given the changes that have happened.
No, I mean, that was well after a long period of no inflation. And you have no inflation. We're terrified we had no inflation, if you remember back then. Mm-hmm. And that long period of no inflation means that there was a different mindset altogether about where we'd end up. Now, who would have thought we'd end up quite in the place we are today? Well, you know, it's a cycle. We've seen it before. But a lot of borrowers haven't seen it before, and that makes it all the more scary for them. And coping makes it, well, they're less prepared for it.
Yeah, and I think that the point you've just made is really important. You know, we've seen it, unfortunately, being rather older. We've seen these cycles before. We've seen how these things can change. But, you know, if you bought a property in the last, 15, 18 years, you've actually only ever seen rates go down, right? And property prices go up. You know, and I keep saying to people,
that's these
ultra-low rates, that's the abnormal story, not the normal story.
Yeah, well, I've done this in the past and worked out the average over the 33 years of the series of the cash rate, and the average rate's 4.6%. So, but the cash rate, now we're only up to 4.1% at the moment. So we're still below the average. Now, when you look at that long-term cycle, anyone who's bought in that 15 years, they blipped up just before the GFC, but the GFC hit us so fast between the eyes that they popped straight back down. So they were hardly even noticed. In fact, by the time people were probably being hit with their repayment increase, the Reserve Bank was already reducing rates. So they haven't been through a proper up cycle in interest rates. Now, suddenly, that's hit people for the first time, and it's very worrying.
Yeah, and so the message now is higher for longer, and some economists are now saying, well, rates may not come down into 2025. I suppose it depends on what happens to the economy. So, you know, we're in a new world.
Yes, we are, and 2025, well, you know, I wouldn't wish for too much earlier, because if you wish for too much earlier, it probably means we've hit inflation, we've hit recession, or a genuine fear of recession, whether in Australia or overseas. So I wouldn't wish for that. And don't forget, of course, that countries like the United States and Russia, through various actions, you know, freezing government spending or aggressive actions, can actually generate world recession. Mm. So be careful about hoping for interest rate cuts too soon, because that would really mean ultra bad news.
Absolutely. Well, let's just switch over, because you've done some really, really interesting research, which I want to just unpack a little. So maybe we should do that now.
Yeah, let's do it. CanStar looked at affordability in the capital cities, and we looked at couples and singles, home units and houses, to say, well, look, what can people afford now compared to before when interest rates were low? So we used average income, you know, sort of both a year and a bit ago and now, and we used median prices a year ago and now to say, look, if you could afford this type of house and you were this type of person a year ago, how would you go today? Now, what's changed, of course, is that interest rates went up and your home loan repayment, if you've done nothing about refinancing it, has gone up by almost 60% in, you know, since April 2022. So that's why this affordability situation will have changed. And in some parts of Australia, you're down to your ability to borrow is down by about $300,000. Now, that's a lot of cash when it comes to buying a house. And even though house prices fell, they've come back up a bit since they really hit the bottom. So people can now afford less. Now, to give the overview of it, going back to April 2022, before the Reserve Bank started moving, couples could afford a house in all of the capital cities, so the median-priced house in all of the capitals. Now, with interest rates up by 4%, they can still afford a house, a medium-priced house, a couple on average income, in all of the capitals, but not Sydney. And in Sydney, they're roughly $300,000 short of being able to afford that. So they could before, and they can't now. Now, when you look at singles, that's a very different scenario, because that's sort of one income between $80,000 and $90,000 all around the country. None of them could afford a house pre-Reserve Bank increases, and none of them still can afford a house. They could afford a unit everywhere in Australia prior to the rate increases. Now they can afford a unit in Darwin or Perth, but not the other capital city. So again, it's the median priced unit. So it's sort of, without having to go through all of the numbers, it sort of says, this is the impact on people. Generally, couples can afford to live in a home unit or a house in the capitals, except a house in Sydney. Generally, singles can only afford a home unit and only in Perth or Darwin.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. And, just to sort of stand back, there are two elements to this. One is the ratio between your income and the price of the property, right? Because that has gone up quite substantially higher relative to incomes. And in fact, the long-term trends are horrendous. If you look at prices versus incomes, they've departed dramatically. But the other is the servicing element, which effectively is the way that the banks make an assessment, which is they look at all of your outgoings, in other words, the costs of things that you have to pay for. And then you look at the income coming in. And again, incomes have been relatively crimped. The costs have effectively risen. And of course, the costs of the mortgage are much higher because of interest rates. So you put all those conundrums together and you get this huge disparity between those who can and those who can't. And unfortunately, now we've got more people who can't afford to buy in the major markets. Or if they can buy, they've got to buy a long way out, or they've got to buy a unit rather than a house. And that means, of course, that they often have higher traveling costs and higher other costs because they're living so much further away from where they need to be for work purposes, for example. So it just shows you the huge pressure on households. And yet, the latest data on house prices suggests that in many areas, they're still, particularly in the urban centres, they're still rising. I mean, this is a really, really, really crazy situation.
Yeah, look, just to underline that point about house prices still rising, in Brisbane, apparently, the latest data shows that the house prices are now 0.8% below the all-time high. So that is a huge shock. Now, you understand house prices, but let me just sort of unpack that a little bit. House prices are the result of demand and supply. Demand is the number of buyers that want to buy a house fresh, and they can be investors or owner-occupiers, but it's the number of buyers and the amount of cash they have in their pockets for the house. Supply is the number of houses coming onto the market. Now, in some markets in Australia, and the ones that went up by most in the recent data, that was Adelaide, Brisbane, and Perth, the number of houses coming onto the market or on the market are only, they're 40% below their five-year average. So supply is very constrained still. So I think that's why we're seeing house prices go up. Now, eventually we'll see demand catch up, but supply sooner or later will catch up as well. So a lot of that upward pressure is driven by a shortage of houses. So that's kind of one of the things to factor in. But the other issue you're raising is, yes, people will live further away from work. They won't be able to choose where they live. And that means higher living costs. So it puts further strain on the household budget. I guess the good thing about at the moment, the good thing about it, if you're a borrower in the market today, the banks have factored in a lot of those costs at today's costs or 6 months ago or whatever. Whereas if you're somebody who bought just before May 2022 when rates went up, you haven't had that benefit. You actually bought it at rock bottom prices, living costs, because there was no inflation, and you bought at rock bottom interest costs. And your 3% buffer has long been eaten up. So they're the ones that are under real pressure. The affordability keeps people out of the market today, but the people who bought just before, well, on one side they'd say, well, just as well I got in then, but the other side would be saying, but heck, I can't really afford this repayment now, so I'm in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my surveys, it's those who bought when interest rates were ultra low, obviously encouraged by Home Builder and the other programs that were actually put in place, and even pulling money out of superannuation through COVID to be able to actually formulate a deposit. So they are actually the cohorts that I see are really in significant difficulty. Some of them are actually working more jobs or more hours to try and get by, but it's pretty difficult. And then on the demand side, I suppose we should also say this high migration number, massively high migration, right, is now beginning to have an impact. Firstly, because, of course, a lot of people, when they come into Australia, go into the rental sector. That puts demand in the rental sector. And that means that some people who are trying to rent, who are already in Australia, can't rent. And so some of them are then being almost forced to think about buying anything to be able to find somewhere where they can live. So, you know, overall, this jigsaw puzzle, well, it's looking pretty messy, isn't it?
It is. I mean, already people are saying we are in a housing crisis. We've really only just opened the borders to immigration. Tourism's only just ramping up to pre-COVID levels. Likewise, overseas student intake. All of those use accommodation in one form or another. And it could be that units that are converted to short-term holiday rentals, but it doesn't matter. They all take accommodation. Now, if we're in a crisis now, we're going to be in an almighty crisis in a year's time. And really, we haven't done much about it. And you can't put high-rise buildings up fast enough to house all the people we're going to try to house. And you can't have people living permanently in tent cities like you see in the US. We're starting to see that in some parks in the big cities, and they're not quite cities. They're little tiny enclaves at the moment, but we do not want the tent cities they have in the US.
No, absolutely. I mean, these are big, big policy issues, and, you know, my own view is I think governments are, you know, trying to mess at the margin, but they're not really tackling the core issues. But if you're an individual household and, you know, you've got all of these pressures with regard to the cash flow and, you know, trying to work out what to do, as we discussed in our previous show, I'll put a link below, you know, there are things that people can do in terms of making sure that they've actually got some of their finances more under control than not. And of course, as we've said in previous episodes, Steve, if you haven't got the very best mortgage you can get, it's worth checking, because actually you can save quite a lot by making sure that you've actually got the very, very best mortgage that you can get. And rates are moving around, which means that, you know, you might have got one previously, but it's worth checking again.
Absolutely is. And I find it frustrating. I just looked at this just before we spoke. I looked at the total dollar figure of loans in Australia as they exist today, and then I looked at the amount of refinance, and the amount of refinance annualized is 12% of the total loan stock. Now that means that it takes people, you know, sort of 10 years to get around to refinancing on average. Now, these are external refinances. People might have renegotiated and got a bit of a discount from their bank. But if it's only 1 in 10 that are using external refinance, it says that people aren't thinking too hard about it, and it's the obvious solution. So for those that can afford it, they must do it. You'll save yourself almost a third of the interest of the repayment increases you've had over the last year and a bit. So you can really help your own budget that way. This is before you even look beyond the home loan. So you must do it. But you know, just 12% actually refinancing in a year is not enough to take advantage of the full benefits available. And it's frustrating for me, actually. I just can't believe people are complacent when they're watching their repayments go up by 60%.
In fact, if you look at the distribution of that refinancing, you know, there's about a third of those with a mortgage who are quite across mortgage rates and are quite agile in terms of actually dealing with their rates and, you know where they are. But there's another third that really are living in set and forget land. And those people quite often are paying 2 or 3 or maybe even 4% higher than they need to. And so... Yeah. It's a really, really important message for those who think, oh, it's too hard. No, it's not too hard, right? But because actually the tools are there to do it. And the difference you can make to your own financial situation if you take advantage of those tools and get on with it are huge. And so I think the message with higher for longer, as we started in the show, is that you can't rely on the Reserve Bank to get you out of jail, right? It's going to be down to individuals taking better decisions about their finances, and that means getting across your mortgage rate and look at the other more loans if you've got loans too, and make sure that you've got the very best rates that you can get.
Yeah, look, I'm glad you raised the Reserve Bank there again, because they're kicking that interest rate cut further down the road. And so are the banks, really. Most commentators have kicked it down by some months. And if you're not looking, if you can't expect a cut until sometime in late 2024 or maybe in 2025, then don't wait for the Reserve Bank. They're not going to come over the hill like the cavalry. So don't wait for them. Now, if you don't believe Martin and I, go into Canstar and sort the tables by just go into 5-star products or something and look at the rates that are available. There are a bunch of loans available below 5.75%. And if you're paying much more than that, you shouldn't be. Now, I will, though, put in a big rider on this. A recent survey we did said that over a quarter of borrowers were already saying that they're sort of very stressed. And 8% said they're already behind with their loan. And 17% or something, more than that, 19% said that they were okay at the moment, they could just make their payments, but they couldn't afford another rate increase. So that's a lot of people who are in a situation where if you can't afford your repayment now, you're not going to be able to get a bank to refinance you. Your existing bank won't do it, and any other lender will not do it either. So unfortunately, around a quarter of borrowers are already out of this market for refinance, which is a sad position to be in. And at that point, if you're really struggling and have made all the budget cuts you can do and all that sort of stuff, it's time to talk to your bank and say, look, at least for a short period, can I try interest only or something like that? You might have a repayment holiday if it's desperate enough, but they're all short-term measures that won't work long-term. So, it's time to start thinking hard about your options.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking to your bank is good advice. I know some people, when they get into difficulty, don't want to raise it with the bank because they don't want to tell the bank, but that's probably not a good strategy. I think the sooner you engage, the better, really, because the trouble is it's a bit like a quagmire. You know, you start walking across and you get deeper and deeper into the mud, and it's harder and harder to move and to do anything. And unfortunately, in my surveys, I do see some people who've actually left it too late, which means that options are then taken away, which means you've got less chance of actually getting and out the other side, still holding the property. And then the final.
The bank. Sorry.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to say yes. The bank will notice if you stop making your repayments. If you have a credit card in another bank, yes, you'll be able to put repayments on the credit card. But in a few months' time, you'll be over your limit, and that opportunity will have gone too. So it gets tougher any way you do it. If you can't make your repayments, so talk to the bank. They do have hardship provisions. They do give you a good hearing. They'll try to find a way of keeping you in your house. And if there's no way of doing it, then all right, that's perhaps the conclusion. But they do try. They try to find a way of of helping you get through it.
Yeah, well, the last thing they want is to see their delinquency rates rise and their bad debts rise. So they're being way more proactive than they were through the global financial crisis, as far as I can see. So, Steve, as we come to the end of this show, I just want to make one other point. You know, we talked about interest rates on the mortgage, but also, of course, interest rates on deposits are also worth underscoring too, because, again, that market is also moving quite fast. And again, if you haven't checked your rates in recent times, you may not actually be on the best rate you can get there either.
Yeah, they're moving around actually at the moment. All of the rates are moving around. Now, when I say around, you get one-way traffic at certain stages in a cycle and you get two-way traffic at other stages. We're at the point where we've got two-way traffic. We've got home loan variable rates going up, but equally an equal number of lenders going down. Fixed rates, same story. You know, some go up, some go down. Deposit rates are at the same stage, but you should be looking for around 5% on your savings at the moment, and you can get that on term deposits if you're prepared to and can lock up your money for 2 or 3 years, and you can get that on savings accounts by taking out the bonus savings accounts. Or the introductory rates and moving your money every 3 months, and that's a pain. But anyway, you can do that. But if you can qualify for the bonus conditions every single month, you can get around 5%. So look for a number with a 5, and you'll be in pretty good shape. Now again, that's below the inflation rate. So your real rate of interest, if you get 5%, is around 0 at the moment. So, you know, just bear that in mind, but you won't get any better. So, you know, if you've got deposits and you don't want to invest it elsewhere because of risk or because you need the money soon, then, you know, you're a lot better off than you were 12 months ago.
Absolutely. The old message is shop around and, you know, use the tools that are there and expect these interest rates to stay high for longer. Expect you know, story to continue to develop. Steve, we'll come back and chat again in a little while down the track because there will be more to talk about, won't there?
Yeah, there always is, Martin. We live in interesting times. So, there's always a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your time today. Great advice as always. And I look forward to the next one. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. Cheers.